Radio was the thing back then.
Did you ever have any awkward moments being live where you had to kind of keep going and?
I don't think you should have asked that question.
We're about to have one now.
I want to tell you when you really think you'll get a serious interview out of all this mess.
I know.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversation, featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here's Daniel Britt.
Legendary may be somewhat overused, but quite accurate when you look at the accomplishments and accolades of our guest today. And these people are here, part of the Weatherford history, my friends and yours, Lily Fern and Steve Weatherford, and Mike Allen, who is also going to contribute some of the to some of the history. We're going to document Mike's history, because as I hear it, Mike's history with the Weatherfords weren't well documented.
No,
during his time.
We're never going to let him say anything about us if he says what we told him to.
That's right.
We have pictures,
and I'm glad to do it.
Lily Fern, I grew up with gospel music, but I'm young, so from the 80s on, I listened to some records. But when Bill Gaither started the Homecoming series early on, I really was introduced to a lot of groups. And I know your group, while you traveled through the Southeast, you were based more out of the West for most of the time. We'll talk about that. But I've really enjoyed your harmony. And when Bill put Henry Slaughter in there and Glenn Payne, and what's that song that you do? And it's got these intricate...
For Our Precious Friend.
That's it.
Henry Slaughter wrote it.
Yeah. I want to talk about that, but first let's start at the beginning. Let's go way back to 1944, and that's when the Weatherfords began, right?
Yes, sir. That's right.
Now, were you a part of the group in 44?
Earl and I were just going together, but shortly after we started going together, before we even married, he had a tenor singer, and the tenor singer kind of fluked out. So he said, let's see what we can do with you, and I sang with them. And then when another tenor singer would come along, he'd say, well, we got a male tenor now, so you're out. And I'd go out and come back in. In the meantime, we had married, and it came to a time, I mean, this happened like 8 or 10 times. And I said, when are you going to wake up and find out that I'm married to you? I ain't going anywhere.
And you probably get you pretty cheap, too, couldn't he, because since you were married?
I was very cheap. As a matter of fact, it's never been changed.
They would call the radio, back on the radio, Dad would say that the listeners would call in and say, you need to get that other guy back in there. He sounds better.
As a matter of fact, I guess we shouldn't mention any names, should we? Especially since the one I was going to talk about is dead and gone. But he was singing with us for a while, and he sang with everybody in the South. And he was with us for a while, and he was a pretty good tenor, but he just didn't match up to what he should have. And while he was in there, while he was singing, Earl had phone calls and said, please get rid of that lady that's singing and get that male tenor back. They were talking about getting me back in there and getting rid of that female.
I guess that means she had a face for radio.
Kaboom.
Come all of you children of the Lord, let's sing of his full and free salvation. Come all you children of the Lord, let us sing to every nation. Come all you children of the Lord, let us sing with jubilation. Come all you children of the Lord, let's sing his praise. Come on, let's sing about his name, oh praise his holy name. I'm glad I met him there. He heard my feeble prayer. He saved me from disgrace by his amazing grace. Oh children of the Lord, let's sing his praise.
Come
gave us a glorious freedom, a hope that never dies. He'll stand with me in the judgment when he spits the Easter sky.
Come on, let's sing.
Let's sing about his name.
California and Ohio, which came first for the Weatherfords? And,
oh, very definitely California. We started in California. Earl had moved to California to work in the shipyards during the war. And then he met a gentleman called Bob Jones, Sr., and he had a group called the Gospel Harmony Boys, and that was out on the West Coast. And he started singing tenor for Bob Jones, and it was while he was singing tenor for Bob that I met him.
This is not the university?
No, okay. No.
No, Bob Jones just was recently inducted into the Southern Gospel Music Hall of Fame.
That's coming up in October.
Coming up, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still alive. He's 90.
And Bobby Joe Jones is here at the present convention with Homeland. He's started out a new thing with Homeland.
He was with Samick Pianos.
And he was ringed during our wedding.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So these were the guys who were with the original,
With the original Weatherfords?
Yeah.
The original Weatherfords were Earl Weatherford. Oh, boy. The bass singer was Bob Gillis. The lead singer was Harold Turman. And Earl sang tenor. And a young man by the name of Cecil Burleson sang baritone. And that was in California in 1944.
They were on the radio a lot out there, KFOX and KGER.
Started on KGER, then we went to KFOX, and then he went up to Hollywood and got on the news station that came in at that time, which was very popular and big, from Catalina.
And, what a memory, Lily. I can't remember.
I can't remember the call letters, but I thought KBIG. It was KBIG.
KBIG. There you go. What can I say?
KBIG. So he was on three radio. We were on three radio stations every day, 7 days a week.
And I've heard about that. And that's kind of, it's hard to imagine in this day and age, but like the Statesman had their radio show, and I heard about, WOWO and Fort Wayne.
And then we were later on WOWO when we moved to the Midwest.
Right. Mm-hmm. What was that like? I mean, was that a necessary part of a group?
Oh, very definitely. We had no television back then.
Yeah.
And that was the way you got the word out to people that where you were going, you're announcing your personal appearances. And back then, you just announced on that you were going to be in a little church, at such and such and such and such and such time, and you'd have a full house every night, 7 days a week if you wanted to work that much. It's not that way anymore.
Yeah. And radio was all live.
Radio was all live. Once in a while, we did some canned stuff. Mm-hmm. But most of it was all live. And we did that purposely because we had concerts to announce that maybe we'd book that morning and we wanted to, and you could get a crowd that fast. Mm-hmm. Radio was the thing back then.
Did you ever have any awkward moments being live where you couldn't, you had to kind of keep going and...
I don't think you should have asked that question.
We're about to have one now.
I want to tell you when I wasn't singing in the group and they had an all male group, one of those periods, and you may have to edit this out. But Earl was announcing.
He's got a year to do that.
Our personal appearances and so forth, and all the group's personal appearances. And while he was talking on the microphone live, all the rest of the guys were undressing him. They got him clear down to his shorts. And they took his clothes out and threw them out in the hall, and he had to finish the radio program in his shorts. And I could tell you some other stories, but you really, they would be X-rated. Yeah. It actually happened. I mean, accidentally.
Yeah, yeah.
The real funny ones came later during television, when they were doing live television. Yeah. That not only do you.
That's great.
And we had one radio program that started at 7 o'clock every morning, and we had to drive about 45 minutes on the Los Angeles freeways, which had just opened up then, which was much as madhouse as it is now, I think. And so I'm not a morning person. I like to sleep. Mm-hmm. And one time we were up singing in the middle of a program, and in the middle of a song, I fell asleep and woke myself up. But I know it was during the song because we were still singing it when I woke up. And I don't know how long I was asleep.
It was a long song.
But you got to remember, I was pretty young, too. Yeah, so I was really a baby.
Yeah. Well, the radio thing, it still happens. That tradition carries on today. Just with some of the groups who've been here, you know, we're talking about something serious, and they're over there picking at each other and, like, trying to make them crack up, and it's just, continues.
Even that in television, when we were with Rex Humbert in Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
I mean, I was singing a solo one day, and they were taping these shows. And I was singing, "I'm as poor as a beggar, but rich as a king." Uh-huh. And everybody was standing out, tossing pennies and dimes and nickels at my feet. And when I got through, I just went out and collected them all up. I had almost $5. The television audience didn't know that at all.
One dream from God and right, my soul was lost. How to traveling in darkest night, my tempest tall. Then Jesus saw my plight, my sin depraved. He came and found me, lies all around me. When I got saved,
glory high,
I got happy,
down
my heart.
And I
told my Lord I'm heaven in heart.
Blessing, he gave a blessing when I got saved.
If heaven you would wait, I'll sing goodbye. Let Jesus Christ come in before you die.
Lord, to suffer
on Mount Calvary, his life he gave.
A ransom,
his power fill you, cover through you, your soul would save.
Glory,
I got happy
down
my heart.
And I told
my Lord,
blessing,
he gave blessing when I got saved.
Glory,
I got happy
down
my heart.
Oh,
my Lord,
I'm
heavenly
part.
Hallelujah,
shout
on him.
I gave him
blessing,
he
gave blessing when I got saved.
At what point did you move from the West Coast to the Midwest? Was it Ohio?
We moved to from Long Beach, California. Actually, we lived in that area anyway. In 1949, we left California, and we first settled in Springfield, Illinois, thinking we would get on a radio station there, and it just wasn't coming through like it was. But Earl always had in his mind WOWO.
Mm-hmm.
And so we finally, we just were there for just a couple of months, and we went on to Fort Wayne, Indiana, did a live interview, and the gentleman that was the manager of the station was, believe it or not, a Catholic Jew. And every other word out of his mouth was obscene.
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, I'm not interested in anything religious, but let me see what you can do."
Hmm.
And we sang, first he wanted to hear, he didn't want anything with religion, so we sang, "There's a little pine log cabin," songs like that, you know.
Yeah.
And it hit his ear. But what really happened, he didn't know, but the Holy Spirit hit his heart.
Hmm.
And so we sang those, and he said, "Blankety blank, what else you got?" So we sang Amazing Grace, and tears rolled down his cheeks, and he said, "Come back here, we'll sign a contract."
That's incredible.
So you know that was the Holy Spirit moving.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
was a phenomenal time for the Weatherfords. We just absolutely, it was brand new. This type of music was brand new in Indiana and Ohio. And it was, there again, we sang for peanut picking contests, for hay baling contests, mm-hmm. And I mean, they came out by in the droves because television hadn't hit yet. Mm-hmm. And we were there until 1953. And they went all canned music, and so that left out the live shows. And mm-hmm. that's when we moved to Akron, Ohio, to work. We went over to work with Rex one weekend, and he asked us to come over and be on the staff. And we went there. We were from there from 1953 to 1963.
Back up real quick. Go back to California. I wanted to ask you this question about that, because today it's called Southern Gospel Music, and it's really big in the South, mm-hmm. and especially the Southeast. In that day, how was gospel music received in California, Long Beach, that area, versus what was going on in Atlanta?
Well, it was different. And it's kind of hard for me to compare the difference because I wasn't in singing in the South at that time. Mm-hmm. But it was big in California and in the Western states. Mm-hmm. It was new.
Sure.
It was new, but we were never known as Southern Gospel.
What was it called?
We were just gospel singers.
Yeah.
I never heard the word Southern Gospel till we moved to probably Akron, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And then I began to hear the word Southern Gospel come through, you know. But don't get me wrong, there's nothing, I like Southern Gospel, mm-hmm. but we never were Southern Gospel. Mm-hmm. We were just gospel singers. I mean, we mm-hmm. have a style, I think we have a style all of our own.
Sure, sure.
And I don't think you can really consider us Southern Gospel. Mm-hmm.
But not, yet, not in the traditional sense that most people think of Southern Gospel.
There was church music and gospel music, and mm-hmm. that's what was what's made the difference back in those times.
did Rex Humbard find you?
We went there. He invited us to come sing for him for a weekend. And we had met Rex years before on, because they were traveling all over California. Well, they traveled everywhere, but when they were on the West Coast, we went to hear them a few times and had met them, but not really. We were personally acquainted. But then when we heard we were in Fort Wayne, he asked us to, he remembered the name, and he asked us to come to sing for him. And it was just like a clinched thing. It seemed like it was just supposed to be that way. And it was a great, great 10 years that we were there.
How many children do you have?
I have a daughter 2 years older than Steve, and Steve, just two.
And Steve's with us. At what point did you come up onto the platform, and did your daughter ever join you on stage?
Just when she was small.
Yeah.
She would come up and sing.
Well, I was adopted into the Weatherfords while they were in Akron, so I think they had me on stage at 5 months. In 1961, so
I guess. Yeah. Well, both of our children are adopted.
I really started my professional career as far as being in the group full time. What I call getting a check for singing. That was I celebrate my singing birthday on 4th of July 1976.
Okay,
it was the first time I actually took the stage as a full fledged member of the group. Prior to that, I roadied for the group for a number of years. I've just always been on the bus since 61. I've been traveling around with the group. But
were you in Ohio in 76? Where were you then?
No, we were based back in Oklahoma at that point.
No, we left Ohio, Akron in 1963.
63, okay.
And went back to California and then back. We've been in Oklahoma now for about the past 30 years.
35 years.
And Oklahoma is not known for its being the dead level center of gospel music, but for us, since we work the East Coast as well as the West throughout the year, it's very conveniently
located. Good location.
24 hours from anywhere in the United States.
Wow.
It's a nice place to live.
Red.
Would it be a fair statement, an accurate statement, to say that the Cathedral Quartet, in a way, was a spinoff of the Weatherfords?
Oh, definitely. They would tell you that. George and Glenn would tell you that if they were here today.
Yeah.
Well, so were the Imperials.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Armin is here. He'd tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They Jake Hess said he wanted a Weatherfords with a statesman delivery with the Weatherford sound, and so that's pretty much what he got.
He hired our bass singer and our piano player
and arranger. So two-fifths of the original Imperials were Weatherford people, and if you look at the roster of the Cathedrals down through the years. I have to get the list out, but most of them at one time had worked for the Weatherfords.
Really?
Roy Trimble, Haskell Cooley, Glenn and George.
Yeah.
Danny Coker.
Hmm.
Bobby Clark.
Bud
Seeger came from the Weatherfords, and he was with them till the end. Eight or nine, I think, out of the 12, 15 or so that they had were at one time come through the Weatherford camp. We had a real good close relationship with the Cathedrals all through the years.
Yeah.
I mean,
Glenn
a lot
George
of people remember
were just like my brothers.
Yeah,
they remember the Cathedrals as the group that went out on top. But I can still remember. I talked to Glenn all these years. He, just was real encouragement to a lot of people. But I remember back in 1974. I was sitting in the office with Dad, and Glenn had called, and they had rolled their bus down a cliff, and it was split in two, and they couldn't get it fixed, and things were tough, and they were about to go under, and they asked Dad if he knew any singers, that they were looking for singers, and they said, well, I'll help you look. But my dad asked Glenn what he's going to do. He said, well, we're trying out these kids, this Roger kid from Arkansas. He's as green as he can be. I don't know what being. And they never looked back after that. It was really fun to watch that happen. Glad to have gotten to see that go down like it did.
Who was first to come through the Weatherford School of Training? Was it Glenn or George?
Glenn joined us first. And actually, I don't want you to get the idea, or anybody in the listening audience, to get the idea that they learned to sing from the Weatherfords, because they were both talented men, very talented men. But they learned a different technique with the Weatherfords, and they would tell you that. But Glenn came with us first, and we had both Glenn and George, but we never had them at the same time in the same group. But, I'm sorry. George was first, because George joined us in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And then when we moved to Fort Wayne, he left, and that was when he came to us when Armin was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was with us until we moved to Akron, Ohio, and stayed with us for a little while. Mm-hmm. Then he left, and about that time, Armin got out of the service and rejoined the group, and that was when we got Lynn Payne and Henry Slaughter. I was wrong in my information. I'm sorry.
It's okay. And so Henry joined at what time?
Henry came in right after Glenn. Right after Glenn came in.
You're about 58,
59? Probably so, because we were there. That group sang together for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Armin Morales, Glenn Payne, Earl and I, and Henry Slaughter playing the piano. And we moved to Akron in 53. So it was that would make it about 55, wouldn't it, that they were together with us?
1855 or 1955?
Did you recognize what you had in Henry Slaughter when you hired him?
Yes. We knew we had a good piano player, but there's one thing that we all did not recognize, and we've all talked at different times, even when Glenn was still alive, and when we were together, Glenn and Armin and Henry, or even separately, we all said we didn't realize what we had then.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a different sound. It was, everybody says that we were 10 or 15 years ahead of our time.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't realize what a statement we were making at that time. But apparently it was a good one. So,
did he do a lot of songwriting for the group?
Yes. We did a lot of Henry's songs. Mm-hmm. I don't think he wrote that many while he was. Well, he wrote some while he was with us, but he brought songs to us. He brought What a Precious Friend with him when we sang it first time.
I think that can't hurt to have kind of a built-in songwriter. I mean, Greater Vision with Rodney
and
Griffin.
And he was a great arranger.
Yeah.
Henry
yeah.
had a memory that he knew what your voice range was, and and he would sit down and write out your part, and that, and then we'd rehearse it. And if you know, you get together, rehearse with the group, and they say, "You're on my part," and he'd say, "Uh-uh, it's right here."
Classic sound from the Weatherfords on Daniel Britt and Friends. I'm Daniel Britt, and my guests today are Lily Fern Weatherford, her son Steve Weatherford, and Mike Allen joins us. Now, we had Mike on the show recently, featured his solo work, but Mike really got his start with the Weatherfords when he sang bass for them. In fact, Mike picked up the conversation here.
Well, and Lily had mentioned about the people that had been with them maybe not learning how to sing from the Weatherfords, but I can tell you from my standpoint that I'm proud to say that Earl Weatherford did spend time helping me to learn how to sing different tones, and that in it's smoother tones, and it has helped me a lot to be a much better singer.
Earl never said and never boasted and wasn't a great solo singer, but he knew how to get a good sound, and he knew how to get it out of new talent or new people. And actually, he's responsible for me having the sound. They say I blend good with male voices, but he's responsible for that too, because he taught me how to cover my tones where I could sing with male voices and not stand out.
Sure. And Mike was the my dad trained a lot of singers. Oh, there've been over a, we compiled a list about a year ago of all the singers that had been in the group, and over 100. Now, that sounds like, hey, those people can't keep help, but over a period of 61 years, it's been over 100. Yeah. And Mike was the last bass singer that my dad trained, the very last bass singer that he ever spent any time with trying to teach this tone thing.
It's so quite an honor for
me. We consider Mike part of our heritage as well.
And what year was that you came through, Mike?
89.
And what year did Earl pass away?
92. June of 92.
What happened after that with the Weatherfords? Were you still traveling in 89 and 90, 91?
We were still going. We were, Earl never stopped singing, even though he'd had a heart attack the last 2 years of his life. He had a lot of heart problems. And the last 6 months, he was on oxygen all the time, but he still got up and sang. But we had hired another young man. And actually, it was Steve and this other fellow and I that were doing the singing, but Earl would sing every other note or something.
He still produced.
He was singing.
But he still had a hand in it.
Yeah. And it was a good cover for him, and he still felt like he was a part of it. And believe me, when he left, I mean, when he died, it was a terrible loss.
Yeah.
It was a terrible loss to the Weatherfords as a group, and then, of course, as a part of our family.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that challenge that we faced when he left was my dad was and Mike will know this, he pretty much handled every aspect of what the Weatherfords did. I mean, from the booking to the arrange, you know, everything.
That's everything.
Just everything. Oh. And I was talking to Mike just tonight about that. Now, when Mike was with us, that was the last easy, fun thing in my life where I didn't have to be responsible for anything but just walking on the stage and singing. And when he died, we became about a 40-50-year-old quartet with 3-week-old management skills, and it was quite a learning curve there for the first couple of years while we took over.
But you've
things
done great.
Well, it's just by the grace of God.
On the business side, but Earl was pretty much the master of the sound. He was
absolutely
always producing, always arranging, and
he was definitely the
sound
in charge of his domain. He wouldn't put up with anything. My dad was a no nonsense guy. He'd fire people for some pretty strange reasons over the years.
Was he native California, or was he born and raised?
Born in Oklahoma. Born and raised within 7 miles of where Steve and I live right now.
What kind of industry background did his parents have?
Farmers.
Farmers.
Mm-hmm. Except for his grandmother was a singer.
His his grandmother on his father's side was a Pentecostal preacher and singer.
Hmm. It skipped a generation. Yeah. He got it later.
I never met her. I never got to meet her. But they said she was phenomenal.
Something about people with farming backgrounds. They have this work ethic, and they really make it happen. As a pioneer in Southern gospel, what have you learned, or in gospel music now, as we know as Southern gospel, or American gospel, or whatever you want to call it?
I don't know what you're going to call it.
What did you learn along the way as you helped pave those roads? A lot of it had to be trial and error.
You're asking a question that would be impossible to answer in an hour's time or 2 hours' time. But I will say the main thing I've learned is when you feel like you can't do anything else, you know, God expects us to do everything within our power to make it go and make it right. But I've learned, and the longer I live, the more time I've spent asking God to lead me and show me, the easier the road is.
Sure.
And you're still going to have trials and problems. And you have things in your life come up to you, like when Earl died. And immediately, I felt God's grace. I never felt that before because I had never lost a husband before. Okay, I've got other problems and trials in my life that I meet every day. But each time I have a grace, it's a different kind of grace. You can't just say grace is grace. It's a grace for every need in your life. And there's a grace for carrying on a group and keeping a group going. And it's God's amazing grace. And that's what I have learned. Now, there have been a lot of lessons I have learned.
Yeah.
But that's the main thing right there. Just turn it over to the Lord and you'll handle it.
And that's probably that's got to be the greatest lesson that you could learn.
By all means. And I've gone through some hard things before I really learned that, like I should have. And maybe I haven't learned it completely yet.
Tenderly he watches over you, every step, every mile of the way.
Like a mother watches o'er her baby,
he is near every part of the day.
Uncertain, and the power of the atom unknown. But there's a far greater power up yonder, whoever watches and cares for his own.
Long before time began, you were part of his plan. Let no fear cloud your brow. He will not forsake.
What's life like for you today? Where do you currently live? And
We live in a little town. How many people are
there? About 600. We live in a little town in south central Oklahoma, about 40 miles south of Oklahoma City, called Paola, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
It's right there near where my dad lived, was born and raised, his family and everything. And it's a little country town, you know, but it's real peaceful. And, you know, you can, everybody knows everybody. And you can come into town and nobody can tell you what street anybody lives on, but you say, where's them singers? Oh, you go down there to the and turn left and look for that big old bus. And it's crazy people. They're always on vacation somewhere. But that's,
you guys keep a pretty good travel schedule?
Pretty much, yes.
We travel. We're on the road about 250 days a year, do about 210 concerts, and push close to 100,000 miles every year on the bus. We've been doing that since... I've been in the group since 76. We've always done that. And we've been praying about going full-time lately. We're thinking about it. Been really seeking the answer to that one.
And who all sings?
It's Steve and I and another gentleman that sings with us.
Uh-huh. Did you ever play the piano?
No, sir, I didn't, and I was accused of that. A guy came to me here at the convention and said, I want to hear you play the piano. And I said, well, I don't know how to play the piano. Oh, yes, you do. I've heard you play. And I said, no, sir, you haven't.
I believe that would be Eva May talking.
And it was either Eva May or it was could have been one of the Spear Sisters, because he must have stand on the, I mean, Rosanelle. Both of them.
Yeah.
But I never did convince him it wasn't me, so...
No, I've had a lot of people tell me what I've done with my career, too. That I've it's been good. I've done a lot of great things, and I guess I've enjoyed myself.
What was it Mark Twain said? Never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Yeah.
I was wandering far from Jesus in the paths of sin and shame.
When I looked up.
Sought salvation, never trusted in his name.
When I looked up,
and he looked down,
yes, I looked up,
and he looked down. I changed my way.
When I looked up, and he looked down,
I am walking in his favor, and I praise him for that day.
When I looked up,
and he looked down,
it's always fun and to think and to dream. And I know Bill Gaither's having a ball doing that sort of thing when he puts these groups together, that he kind of comes up in his mind. Well, you would sound good on this part and you would sound good. I don't know.
He's great at doing that.
I have no like musical theoretical, you know, reasons of saying that you would sound good here and you would sound good here. But I just like to see what would happen if you and Eva May and a Vestal were still around, maybe put in a Connie Hopper in there. Some of the classiest ladies in gospel music. And did you keep up to date with Eva May and Vestal?
Just recently, Eva May Lefevre and Naomi Siegel and myself did a special thing with Charlie Ward at the Grand Ole Gospel.
Yeah.
This is in August. But he had three altos up there. So that's not an easy thing to do.
No. And that's what I was saying. I didn't put that much thought into it when I just mentioned that about who would sing what part. But just to have those personalities up
there. Well, fortunately, I have a low enough voice that I could take the third part.
Bass, if you wanted to.
If I had to.
Female bass.
And I would just listen for that third part and fill it in because, of course, there was no time to rehearse. And if we had, well, we would all have forgotten what we were supposed to do anyway. We're too old to remember.
Shoot.
You've come a long way through gospel music, and you've seen a lot of changes. Where we are today in 2007, what's your opinion of the current state? Are you happy with the way things are going, or do you think things need to change and go a different direction? I mean, you're bound to have an opinion.
No, I think that gospel music is better than it's ever been.
Yeah.
I've had people say, oh, it's a lost art, it's going down the tubes, you know. And I say, well, it looks like it's getting bigger to me all the time.
Sure.
And I think there's a good future for gospel music.
Well, we have satellite radio, we have
and
internet.
And I don't know you're going to call it Southern gospel, American gospel, what, but I meant as we see it to gospel music today.
Yeah.
It always comes down to the message. It doesn't matter what rapper you put on. If you sing about Jesus, it's
yeah.
And it's when you talk about Bill Gaither, you have to remember all these videos he has done. I'm just going to use ourselves as a reference. When Earl died, a lot of people thought we had quit singing because Earl was gone. And when he put us on the video, put me on the video, it made people realize that the Weatherfords were still here and going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It helped us personally, what he has done through these videos. And I can't speak for anybody else, but I know for a fact that he has helped us, and I know he's helped other people.
And I think one thing, because you talked about what your style was not called, and it wasn't called Southern Gospel at that point, I think what Bill has done that has really, really helped is he was a fan of Southern Gospel, the Statesman. He tuned in to what was going on in the Deep South.
Oh, yeah.
But
and he
was in Indiana.
He listened.
Yeah, he was in Indiana, though, too, and he heard the Northern Evangelical sounds of music and what was going on with the Weatherfords.
Yeah.
And he was able to put his love for all of it together and introduce me to a sound like the Weatherfords and the Hemp Hills.
Yeah, well, WOW was only about 40 miles up the road from his house, so he didn't have any trouble dialing that in.
Good point there. He was raised in the same type. I was raised in a Nazarene church. He was raised in Nazarene Church of God, that realm, which was not Southern gospel at all,
right,
or not gospel.
Right.
But he had a feel for this, what we're doing today.
Mm-hmm. In terms of gospel,
so much the things changing in gospel music is all the different names, the different styles. Southern gospel, I don't think in my lifetime I've ever seen it as diversified as it is now, with all of the other styles and the different things that are in and out of it, and all of it's good. Well, I'd say most of it's good. Some of it is a little interesting, and you can't really. I don't think today you can put a group out there and say this is the definitive Southern gospel sound.
Right.
I don't think there's a group out there like that at all. But we were having this conversation the other night just about this is, well, what are they going to do with this sound? What are they going to do with that sound? Well, if you build a brick house, you take the bricks, you give it a good foundation, and you'll put a brick on the bottom, and you'll work it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, but in the middle of that, you have to have mortar.
Yeah.
And to me, all of the local talents, the small groups that are just getting started, they're kind of the mortar between the bricks.
Yeah.
They're just as important as the biggest group that you can think of, because they're going to reach people that we can't reach. And, you know, Bill Gaither's going to reach people. He's going to sing people we can't sing to. And we're going to reach the people we reach. Mike's going to sing to people. And we're all part of the foundation and the brick, the whole building, which we call gospel music. And if we base our foundation on Jesus Christ, we won't fail.
Yeah.
We won't fail at all.
It's so easy to get caught up in industry and who's the biggest. And, you know, and if you really keep that in focus, what you just said, Steve, I think you've got a great point. It doesn't matter if you make it to the top, if you're a Bill Gaither, or if you're singing back here at the church in the midst of pine trees, nobody can find, you know.
Yeah, just part of the mortar.
You're part of it.
Somebody has asked me, several people have asked me, well, what are you going to do about this new thing that's coming up here, you know, and so forth.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to do the same thing that I've done always.
Mm-hmm.
I've been singing 61 years, and I was singing long before there was anything like this going on. I was singing long before there was a quartet convention, long before there were any of these other things. And who was I singing for? I was singing for God, for Jesus.
Yeah, Lord. But you weren't doing it before Ben Spear was.
No.
If there's someone who's seen the changes.
But I'm older than he is, so.
You're listening to our conversation with the Weatherfords, Lily Fern and Steve Weatherford, and Mike Allen joining us at our table. Let's listen to this song from the Gaither Homecoming Friends featuring Lady Love Smith, Jeannie Johnson, and Lily Fern Weatherford. On Daniel, Britt, and Friends.
I am weak and I need thy strength and power to guide me on my way this hour. Lead me through
guys, thanks for coming by and spending some time with us. How can we keep up with the Weatherfords?
www.lilyweatherford.com is a good place. The singing news, our schedule is in there every month. And when you drive by your local church, check the sign out front. Sometimes they'll put it on there. Sometimes they won't. And if that doesn't work, look for the old gray ghost, the bus sitting out there. Yeah. I think we're the only ones out there with our name still on the front. Can't quite get over that.
Well, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for being a part of this.
Hey,
this
thanks, Mike.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern Gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.